Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Condo with Kate, and I'm my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
How the devil are you?
How the devil are you? I'm very well, Luke. How are you?
Yeah, I bet. I've got some, in fact, I'll crack it open now. Got my nice bottle of Corona.
Ah. Oh, yeah. Should have said. Actually, wait there. Hang about. Right. Hang about.
Bottle of Corona.
Less tasty bottle of Corona.
Have you got one as well?
No, I've got a little brew dog. But I think if we're gonna have a beer, I don't want you to have a beer on your own, mate.
Yeah.
That's the last one I got left.
What I normally do, I normally get like a free bottle for the weekend and then three bottles.
Nice.
If you get the free, it's like £6 or something. He said, why don't you just get like the 12 for 10 deal? And I said, well, if you get that, I'm going to drink more.
That's a slippery slope, that is. 12 for 10.
She said, well, you save so much money. And
then she went, if you're going to get 12 for 10, why don't you get 50 for 20?
Yeah. But I'm blasting.
Well, that's a good idea, actually. I'm happy about that now. Yeah, it's one of those things. If they're there, they need to be drunk. They're looking at you.
Yeah.
It's not like a, suddenly got a problem, but... Maybe I do.
So, other than that problem, have you seen any of the horror news at all?
Seen a couple of bits and bobs. I feel like I'm missing something huge.
Yeah, well, did we talk about the Fangoria stuff? I guess, I don't know if we want to talk about the Fangoria stuff.
No. Well, I don't know.
Oh, mate.
We didn't. Did you want to talk about the Fangoria stuff?
I don't know. I mean, I would just say it's been a very disappointing couple of weeks for me. Rob Galuzzo is the host of Shockwaves podcast. I really love that podcast. Listen to it every week, almost like a religion. And then you feel like you know someone so well when you listen to the podcast. And then you find out this horrendous stuff about them. And it just kind of rocks your world a bit. And then the next week, the whole stuff about Warren Ellis came out. I was like...
Yeah. Oh, God, Warren Ellis,
oh, my God.
Yeah. Again, it's disappointing. There's been a lot of that in the British wrestling world as well. I don't know if you've heard a lot about that. A lot of people coming out with stories of a lot of people taking advantage of their positions of power, and yeah, not good.
It seems like the world is going through a sort of cleansing thing at the minute, where everyone's sort of saying, "Me too."
Maybe like a second wave of it after the Me Too movement, but
yeah,
all positive, I suppose, in the long run.
Yeah, it's a shame in some ways, but it has to be done, I guess. So,
what does that mean for the future of the Shockwaves podcast? Because he was just a co-host, right?
Yeah, but I think he was essentially kind of like the lead. I won't say the leader, but I got the impression he did a lot of the organizational side of stuff.
Mm.
I think they're still going to go on. I don't know. They've not done a couple of weeks' worth now. I guess they've just got to leave it for a bit.
And then
come back to it. It may be weird, but they've got to keep going. It's, I don't know. podcasts are an important medium. I feel like people maybe undervalue them, but when they're not there, you do miss them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So when did that come out? That was like last week or something, wasn't it? And I think he just tweeted he was resigned from his position at Fangoria. To be fair, I didn't look too much into it. I kind of saw a very brief, vague description of what had happened, but I didn't really know much about him. So
it all kind of came out from the Fangoria stuff. Some producer at Sin Estate is like a bit of a Harvey Weinstein sort of character. So the people at Fangoria said to Sin Estate, because Sin Estate own Fangoria, you need to distance yourself from us. And I don't think it's been done. A lot of people at Fangoria have left, so it looks like Fangoria is on the rocks. I don't know, man. It's crazy. It just feels like there's a lot of good stuff happening and it's sort of dissolving.
Yeah. Dissolving for shoots of progress to appear afterwards, though, from whoever.
I like it.
Decent people. Yeah. I like it. That's where we come in, Luke. We step in and go, right, guys, come on. Right, guys. We're at the reins now. I have none of this shit. I don't know if you saw the Candyman little short film.
Taster sort of thing, yeah.
Little taster. So Naida Costa shared this week. A little puppets, paper puppets.
Looks taster. Amazing. Like, it looks really good.
I saw a little bit, but I tried not to watch much because I was a little bit, I was thinking spoilers, but I was like, well, it's a bloody remake, isn't it? So what am I talking about? It does look awesome.
The music. I feel like that was the Bernard.
It sounded a bit like that, yeah. So apparently September 25th, 2020. So in terms of cinemas reopening, I know that I think the only one in the UK I've heard about is Cineworld. We're reopening on July the 10th. And I think they're showing like Empire Strikes Back or something. Apparently Mulan is supposed to be coming out like towards the end of July.
Yeah, Tenet is supposed to be screening as well. And I feel like it doesn't matter. I need to see that on the big screen. Need to go watch that.
Well, apparently he said, Christopher Nolan said, this is the one film out of all of his films that he would recommend seeing on the big screen, whether he means IMAX or just in a theater. But yeah, that's
when I went to watch Interstellar at the cinema. It's maybe the best cinema. It's up there with Avengers, a couple of moments, but it's up there one of the best cinematic sort of experiences I've had.
When do you think everything will kind of be like release schedules? At least, do you think they'll start getting back to normal in September? Because I know a lot of people have been saying September for a lot of the releases in May, June, July that we didn't get. I know things like Bond are going to be November, right?
I guess so. But I mean, it seems like people have got bored with the coronavirus anyway. They're just sort of taking on life.
Yeah, pretty much. But then if they open them, are they going to do like a distancing thing or like every two or three seats?
They have to do something like that.
Because that's going to annoy me more than usual.
I get annoyed quite a lot, and the social distancing is already in place. Like, it's never full.
Yeah, you're always sat
right across from someone else.
Yeah, but babe, this is, again, the landscape of everything's going to change for such a long time. Like, people who probably didn't go to the cinema are going to be like, oh, go to the cinema, bloody lovely. Like, everyone who took up jogging when lockdown happened. When the cinemas reopen, everyone's going to be flocking to them. I could watch a film in a big room. Yes.
Yeah.
Also, last week we got the PS5 reveal video. And even though there wasn't loads of stuff about horror, we did get a big, big reveal, which I didn't really expect to happen then. I don't know if you did, but... of did Resident Evil 8.
Did you even realize it was until it said?
No, I didn't. I didn't realize it was until about halfway through the trailer when I saw the Umbrella logo. I think because like my cynical head was sort of convinced that there's absolutely no way we're going to get a Resident Evil 8 trailer at this point. I honestly did not think it was. And because of all it looked identical to all the leaks we'd heard, and I know I'd been reporting this on the podcast every few weeks when we heard new stuff. And as soon as it did seem to include werewolves and witches and vampires and a village, a big creepy village, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's all come true. So Resident Evil Village, which has obviously got the 8 of the Roman numerals in the word, which is pretty, you know, ingenious. They couldn't have not used that, I guess. Yeah. Looks like a cross between Resident Evil 7 and Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, definitely. Ethan is like the main character again. I mean, I'm really happy that they sort of continued with 7. I was been playing a bit of 7 again recently. And I just really enjoy that first-person horror perspective. And it's really cool that they're doing more of that. I did see one thing. I don't know if they needed to use Ethan, because he was a sort of a non-character to allow you to be the sort of protagonist in a way. Mm-hmm. But I did see there was developers talking about it, and they were saying, we're adding more action. We know we've listened to you, and we want to put more action into the game. And I was like, I don't think anyone has said that.
No. It's almost like Resident Evil 7 was like a scaled back, slightly scaled. It's almost like, right, we went too action heavy with 6. It was like a action movie. So now we're going to scale that back a bit. And after just one installment, they've gone, we're going to crank the action up a little bit more. You know,
I feel like even in Resident Evil 7, like the action stuff is like you have a chainsaw fight at one point. I kind of feel like that's why do you need to go more than that?
I guess what it is like Resident Evil 7 wasn't advertised as an action heavy game, was it? I know when you play it, it does go into action heavy places. It was advertised as a lot different. But this is like people with giant axes leaping off of roofs, werewolves like coming at you, vampires sucking on your blood.
It looks cool. I'm excited to play it. Definitely, the werewolves aspect looks a lot better than I thought. In your mind, werewolves don't work proper, like in that scary sense.
No, but I think one thing I was thinking is that they can explain everything away in Resident Evil just by saying, "Oh, it's a bioweapon."
Yeah,
they could just explain everything away. Werewolves, we've done werewolves. Got some witches, got some vampires. What's that about? It's just a bioweapon we were working on, and they've all got loose. Yeah, that's pretty much it. So Chris obviously looks nothing like Chris did in Resident Evil 7 either. So that's obviously a bit confusing.
Yeah, he looks like a bad guy in this as well. Maybe.
Don't know. Yep, should be cool though. What else have we got in terms of news? There were a couple of things I read. One thing about, did you hear about a Alien 5 treatment? Walter Hill exists, and apparently he wants Ripley to come back in this, but I think it was written before the Blomkamp Alien film, and then even before Ridley Scott's new trilogy of movies, even though there's only 2 so far. But yeah, there's something else out there that exists that could
Alien re-resurrection. Yeah.
How old is Sigourney Weaver now, though? You know, as long as further time goes on.
Yeah.
It sounds disrespectful to a horror icon. I'm sorry. How old are you? And then I also saw that Deep Blue Sea 3 will be released this July. Apparently, it's being released on the July 28th. And I didn't even know. I didn't even see number 2. I think I saw it advertised, but this is apparently genuine. Naff. Looks naff. Yeah. I thought I'd just drop that in there for some reason. I don't know.
Mate. That Kevin Bacon film. I've kind of not had my eye on the ball with new films coming out. But there's that Kevin Bacon horror that's coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I saw that advertised.
I've only seen
called something like.
Yeah. Like,
isn't it called something like You Should Have Left? Or
that's the one. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I saw some people complaining because it's like a 60-year-old man married to a 34-year-old woman. Maybe that's
When you're Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
When you're Kevin Crispy Bacon, 61 years old though, man. I mean, when you look at him, no way. Yeah. He's looking good. He's looking like a side of bat bacon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Looking sharp.
So I've heard mixed things. I don't know about the film.
I haven't heard anything about it. I saw the poster and I went, oh, there's a film. I literally didn't know anything about it. So,
yeah. What else? I think there's been something else as well to come out, or it's coming out. I've not really been paying attention to. There's some new things on Shudder as well. Scare Package or something as well.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard about this.
I want to watch that.
Scare Package, Anthology. Wasn't there something else about a videotape film?
Like a cursed videotape thing. Yeah,
something like that. I need to, like, this is the thing. I think I'd be more invested in Shudder if I could watch it, like, on my TV.
On your PlayStation.
I think I said that. I said that before. On my PlayStation or on my TV, because currently I think the only way I can watch it is on my Mac, and I just don't really want to. Don't really want to sit there and watch a film on my Mac.
You could sign up through your Amazon Prime account if you've got Amazon Prime, and watch it through your Amazon.
Yeah. I think you said that. Yeah.
But I don't think there's also everything. Yeah.
I've just seen this, but Puppet Combo. Video game developer, classic horror. So I played The Glass Staircase, which I know you've been playing as well. I couldn't finish it, Luke. I officially let it beat me because.
Wait, why did you get into it?
So I got killed by the big bad, like towards the end. You know, when you're in that room and the guy attacks you and the big scary red guy. Basically, I think my controls were set up a little bit incorrect. I kept getting like the door animation twice, so it took me ages to get to where I was, and when you die you have to go back a long way, and it happened to me twice, and I just thought I can't do it again. I honestly can't, and I just let it beat me, and I hate to be that guy, but I did. But he's released a new game called The Enigma of Salazar House, a point and click adventure retro horror game, which I think is just been released this week.
They're becoming more of like a horror game publisher now, other than just
it's not just one person then, I don't think.
Yeah,
that's cool. I'll give that a little go. Sweet. You been watching anything this week?
I watched something that we'll talk about next week. But I did watch. Someone was telling me. I think I was on a Discord. I was talking about Takashi Miike films. Because I need to watch some more Takashi Miike. I don't think I've seen all that much. Maybe like five films out of his 50. And then they said, no, you don't need to watch any more Takashi Miike films. You need to watch some, a guy called Sion Sono. He's like the modern version of Takashi Miike, I guess. So I had a look around. There's quite a lot of films by this guy called Sion Sono. The only one I could find to watch, though, was on Amazon Prime called Tag, and it's the most batshit insane film I've seen in a long time. So it starts off, it might just be best going blind, but I mean, skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to hear this. But so it's about a girl who's on a school bus, and they're going for some school trip or something. She drops her note on the aisleway, whatever you call that in the bus, gangway.
Yep. Gangway.
Bends down to pick it up. And then, you know, in Ghost Ship, where the rope slices through everyone, that happens, but it's like a particularly sharp wind. And it slices through the top half of the bus and through everyone, all these girls. The girl stands up and she's surrounded
I've definitely seen that. I've seen that. Oh, okay.
Someone else said that, because I think it might be a GIF or something.
Yeah.
And then she she goes. Like, she's completely covered in blood. The wind chases her for a bit, and then she escapes it, washes herself down in the river, and then goes to school. But no one believes her. What happened? So, but she doesn't seem to like push that this crazy thing happened. She just eventually, 10 minutes in, she goes, "Okay, we're at school," and if she goes to school, that's normal. Like, sits down with her friends,
getting home for a day. yeah,
I mean, it's an absolutely insane film. But it's kind of cool. It's got a lot of like post-rock shoegaze kind of music running through it.
Oh, right.
It's kind of sweet. I wouldn't say it's horror, but it has got it's just a madcap genre blend. So I'll be checking out more of his films, but that was a experience.
What's that film called, sorry?
Tag.
Oh yeah, you said that. Yeah. And where did you watch that?
That's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. What about you? Indeed. So I've been kind of on this journey of watching like sequels to classic horrors that kind of in preparation for the double bill that we're going to do next week. Also, just because I realized that some sequels, like, I've just never seen or never even given the time of day, despite the fact that some of them have got like quite classic moments in them that kind of I recognize as like, oh, I've seen that before. Oh, I recognize that. So I did the two Poltergeist films, obviously, fairly recently. Oh, yeah. This week, I did The Exorcist sequels, Exorcist 2 and The Exorcist 3.
I don't think I've ever seen 2, but I've seen 3.
Good. Yeah, so 2 is like, almost feels like it's not a spiritual successor to the original, because it's got some really like unique themes and stuff. It's sort of like, okay, it's like, okay, so we got demonic possession, but also this weird sort of like psychological, spiritual stuff with like tribes and the origin of the Pazuzu demon and like what it means and planes of existence. And it's just all like really weird, but I kind of find it a bit fascinating. And like, it's got absolutely panned by reviews and critics.
Yeah, Mark,
like, it's really, really negative. But like, it. Mark Kermode hates it, but I find it like oddly fascinating. Like, when it did lean into the sort of Exorcist stuff, I enjoyed it. It felt like a really individual film, and I guess that's what The Exorcist 3 does. It stands on its own as a really good film, because it's like a sort of really tightly wound murder mystery.
Exorcist 3 has some great moments in it as well. The famous one where the nurse or someone has giant scissors.
Yeah, that's kind of like out of nowhere. But I don't know. Like, that one definitely exists in the Exorcist world much better than the second one does.
So, I don't know if I've made this up in my mind, but at the end of Exorcist 3, where Brad Dourif, whoever what his name is, he plays the possessed guy, possessed priest or something? I can't remember. But as they're talking to him, is he like rapidly aging and de-aging as they're talking to him? I seem to remember, like, every time the camera cuts back, is like his face has changed, or like there's something.
I don't think so.
Okay,
but it's kind of weird because he's not the guy. He's like, the guy is the priest from the end of Exorcist.
Yeah,
the one who jumps out the window and falls down the stairs. But he's like been possessed by Pazuzu and the spirit of this serial killer called the like Gemini Killer, who is that Brad. Dude.
Maybe that's it. Maybe his face is turning into Brad Dourif's face or something.
Yeah, their faces are like changing. I think Pazuzu's face is in there as well. But like, yeah, like a really genuinely unnerving film, with some really creepy visuals. And I was pleasantly surprised by both of them. The Exorcist, the beginning, I've seen as well with Peter Sarsgaard. Well, I've not seen that for years, so I need to go and watch that again to see if that holds up. But I think that's another one that's been panned. Yeah. Absolutely panned, Luke Condor. Absolutely panned.
The only other thing, I downloaded Outlast 2. And I started going through it. I've heard lots of things saying it's nowhere near as sort of creative as the first one. But I'm like 10 minutes in and I'm already thinking, it's so scary.
Yeah.
The mechanic of it, of the camera and the batteries dying. Yeah. There's just something really terrifying about it.
It's just horrible being in any game where you can't like defend yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you not defend yourself in that? I don't think you can.
No, you can run away. They did announce Outlast Trials, the next one, but it looks like they're going for that 4v1 sort of. I mean, actually, I'm just sort of assuming that.
Okay.
It looked like they were doing some sort of cooperative versus killer.
Yeah.
Whatever that genre's called. Asymmetric?
Cooperative versus killer, yeah. I know what you mean. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, I think I prefer Dead by Daylight to Friday the 13th.
Yeah, I re-downloaded Dead by Daylight.
Me too. Especially for the Silent Hill stuff.
Yeah, I had one game.
I've purchased that.
And I won.
Died.
But it's good. It's a good game. I think, I don't know how you could, because people play that for like a year, like years, like they just keep playing the same thing. And I don't know how you could play it for that long once you figured it out.
Yeah, you kind of do it a few times and you go, that was pretty fun. Yeah. Get on with your life.
We need to ask Lee about that because he plays it a lot.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, but that, man, what are we doing in the shadows?
Yeah, wait, I did watch one more thing.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. I watched, actually, one more thing. I'm just going to mention really quickly, I watched a couple of classics that I hadn't seen in years. I watched Wishmaster on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Super dated, hasn't aged well at all. CGI looks kind of naff. Everyone's kind of annoying. That's that one. I did also watch Gremlins 2, which is like the most mental sequel that has ever existed, I think. Like, it's just gone, okay, if Gremlins 1 is like 4 out of 10 for Gremlins Madness, all right, no, 6 out of 10 for Gremlins Madness, Gremlins 2 is like 908 out of 10 for Gremlins Madness.
I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
Me neither.
I preferred it quite a bit to the first one as a kid.
It's ever so entertaining, but at the same time, unfulfilling as a sequel. And the last one,
dressing up like Rambo, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great, though. I like that bit.
Paperclip, bow and arrow, or something. Yeah.
And I watched another film which I saw a trailer for, and I found it looked quite interesting, called Body Cam, and it stars Mary J. Blige, and also the brother of that wolf, that something wolf from Hereditary. What's his name? Alex Wolf.
What? Oh, the brother of Alex Wolf.
Yeah, so it's the brother of him. But basically, it's based around a murder to get. There's a murder, and the body cam footage almost shows like some sort of supernatural going on.
Yeah,
of some sort, and Mary J. Blige tries to hunt it down, and there's like crooked cops and stuff. Basically, it's like it's a film. It doesn't know whether it's a drama or a horror film. It's a drama for the most point, and then suddenly it goes, "Oh, actually, I might be a horror film."
Yeah,
but anyway, pretty much interesting. Wait there, pretty much nothing happens. Oh. I could not even tell you what happens. Things happen. And then the film ends. I said nothing happens and then things happen. But I was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to get from that film. Who am I rooting for? What's the outcome? Anyway,
maybe
it was one of those films
you're asking
where,
too much of the film.
Maybe.
You're asking too much. You should accept it for what it is.
Entertain me. I should accept it for what it is. Mindless shit. And that's it.
Yeah.
There we go. Very nice. That's it though, Luke. That's it. Apart from that, I've been playing The Last of Us 2. Which I won't say much about because I'm sure a lot of people are diving into it.
How many innocent?
I reckon maybe I've killed a.
How many people have you made scream?
Don't know about innocent. I made a lot of people scream, so I do a lot of stealth kills. But I reckon maybe 6-7 hours in, and yeah, it's more the same of the first game, like the same sort of vibes, the same sort of bleak, hopeless nature with a little sprinkling of humanity. That's pretty much what it's like.
Yeah.
I feel like I can. It's one of those games where I can. It doesn't shock me because I can predict when things are going to happen based on the camera angle. Right. So when the camera comes in close to characters, I go, "Something's going to happen here. Someone's going to jump out. Someone's going to do this. Someone's going to do that." When the camera's at another angle, I'm like, "I think I figured out the formula." When the camera's at another angle, I know I'm safe. I'm like running around. Yeah. Jumping about. As soon as the camera goes to one angle, I'm like, whoa. There's maybe one moment where that didn't happen, but
Kind of what
it's great.
With like jump scares in horror films. There's like around the 2000s. I think at some point we all got pretty good at like saying something's about to happen or not. We figured out the formula.
It's when everything goes super quiet. You know. Going quiet, so the next loud noise just has even more of an impact.
Yeah, I'm always in like Disney Pixar films. I'm always like, any minute now the parent will be dead, or like something.
Oh.
We're gonna hit the sad nadir of the film very soon.
Yeah,
But
that's what you're expecting.
That's what I go to the films for. Yeah,
but that's that. That is that. But what we do in the shadows? So we're doing the movie, not the bloody series, man. That's completely different.
Have you seen the series?
I've seen the first series.
Okay, me too.
Okay. I haven't started the second series yet, but it's on the list as one thing I need to jump into soon. Although reviews I've been seeing is it isn't quite as good as the first series, but... Okay, so What We Do in the Shadows is a 2014 New Zealand mockumentary horror comedy film written and directed by Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi. Oh, it's directed by both of them. I didn't even know that. Did you know that? You know that?
I thought it was just... I never really questioned it.
So it's the first installment in the What We Do in the Shadows franchise, which is obviously just two series so far. It stars Jermaine Clement...
The other series, isn't there? The Wellington... Wait, is that what you said? There's the Wellington Paranormal Investigator series.
Oh, yeah, of course. And a possible spin-off werewolf film, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Wellington Paranormal. Paranormal. The film stars Jermaine Clement, Taika Waititi, along with Jonathan Brew, Ben Fransham, Stu Rutherford, and Jackie Van Der Beek. I'm assuming Stu Rutherford is Stu.
Yeah, I've got some funny trivia about it.
Okay, so Viago, Deacon, and Vladislav are vampires who are finding that modern life has them struggling with the mundane, like paying rent, keeping up with the chore wheel, trying to get into nightclubs, and overcoming flatmate conflicts.
Yeah. It's got... I mean, it's a bit of a modern classic, really. It's got 4.1 on Letterboxd, 96% Rotten Tomatoes. Audience is a little cooler on it, 86%. I mean, as soon as... There's been like a Flight of the Conchords-shaped hole in everyone's lives since the series ended. And as soon as I think Jermaine Clement was involved in something, we were probably a bit sad about Brett not being in it. But this is pre-Taika Waititi being maybe bigger than everyone, being sort of the biggest out of all.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, but I'd seen Taika Waititi's name because he directed Eagle vs. Shark. And I remember thinking I think he did some Flight of the Conchords episodes maybe. But I had no idea he was Viago until years later.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, really? I've watched all of Taika Waititi's earlier films in the last couple of months. So like Eagle vs. Shark, Boy. What else? There's something else I'm missing.
I don't know.
Obviously, Hunt for the World of People, this, and then obviously now he's made a big leap into Marvel and Star Wars and all that stuff. He's a big deal.
Like it is that he's incredibly talented, but incredibly funny, and he just seems to like ooze sort of charisma. Did you see the thing I'm like?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Twenty years ago, like he won an Oscar for a short film, and he's like,
"Oh shit!"
Almost exactly the same as he is now. In the audience, there he's kind of like pretending to be asleep when the camera's on him and stuff. He just feels like he's always been that sort of troublemaker.
Yeah,
casual and funny guy. Yeah,
I like it. I really, really enjoyed the sense of humor that goes alongside this because it does feel like a extension of the Flight of the Conchords. Deadpan, dry stuff. And obviously Jermaine being in it helps as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. I love it. It really is good. And when you see pop up little cameos from people that you recognize from Flight of the Conchords or those surrounding films and stuff, it's very cool.
So the first time I watched this, like, it's pretty good. And then I thought the series like took it, taken it and made it a lot better. But now I've watched this film again, I'm like, this is an absolute classic. Like, it's so spot on. It's very much like a Spinal Tap for the horror crowd.
Mm.
But I think it's perfect.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the series as well. But I think again, it's just as good as the actors they've got in it. So obviously like Matt Berry,
Ivan Novak, and
Dimitri, exactly.
First name. Yeah.
Natasha. Sorry.
Are they brother and sister?
She's in Stafflet's Flats, isn't she?
Yeah, are they brother and sister in real life?
Jamie
should be a bigger star as well.
I think he will. Also, I think Stafflet's Flats has been nominated for a few BAFTAs.
Okay.
I think.
I saw his stand-up routine. I don't watch much stand-up anymore, but it was off the charts. It was amazing. Yeah,
it is. It feels like that. I think as soon as people caught on to him, and I think a lot of people have, but as soon as people really do caught on to him, he's going to be like a huge, huge name.
Yeah. Well, he's in Fleabag, isn't he? But even then, I don't think people kind of took him that seriously. But
yeah, I think Stafflet's Flats has got a lot more in it. Like, I think we've had 3 series now, but you know, as soon as that becomes even bigger, say if it wins big at the BAFTAs, people are going to be like, right, okay, take this, we'll see how many more series we get at that. But yeah, I love that show.
Yeah. So here we got Taika Waititi as Viago von Dornish Martin Schaden Heimberg, me von Blitzenberg, aged 379, an uptight member of the household. Waititi bases performance on his own mother. Jermaine Clement as Vladislav the Poker, aged 862, a former tyrant with extreme powers. Clement bases performance on Gary Oldman's Dracula. Jonathan Bruch as Deacon Brooke, aged 183. The young rebel of the group who is fond of knitting, erotic dancing, and being cool. And Ben Fransham as Peter, aged 8,000. He's like the Nosferatu.
Oh, yeah.
Vampire. And then we've got Corey Gonzalez Macure as Nick, who becomes a vampire in the events of the film.
Yeah. And then Stu Rutherford as Stu, who may be, you know, the focal point of the whole film, the centerpiece of the whole film. But yeah, it's got obviously loads of cameos from people who I recognize from Taika Waititi's early films, like people who've been in Eagle vs. Shark and Boy. Rhys Darby, obviously, from Flight of the Conchords. So it's all good stuff. So it's like a fly on the wall documentary style, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much. I'm pretty sure that's what the series is. Is the series a fly on the wall documentary? Isn't it? Yeah.
The cameraman keep getting eaten, I think, or something like that.
So it's a documentary crew follow these 4 vampire roommates who share a flat in Wellington in New Zealand. And we kind of get like an introduction to everybody, and everyone's kind of got different powers, haven't they? Some can levitate. Is it Vladislav can turn into animals?
You can't get
the
faces right anymore.
Yeah. You can't get the faces right anymore. So he's just got an animal with a Jermaine Clement face. And they kind of do go into how they ended up living in Wellington, like what happened when they travelled there.
I can't remember how I don't know how all of them were there, but I remember Viago, his girl that he liked, had moved to Wellington, and he got shipped by his familiar, and they put the wrong postage on it, so it took him 18 months to land. By that time, the girl had moved on.
Yeah, she moved on 18 months later. Vladislav, we kind of get a little bit of history of him. So obviously, he's basically been there and done it all in terms of vampires. He's called the Poker because he used to like torture people, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like poke them.
Torture chamber as well.
Yeah, and he's haunted by memories of his nemesis, who he only refers to as the Beast. Yeah. And we see like lots of medieval illustrations and stuff of what the beast possibly could look like, and it's all pretty horrific.
Yeah. So I mean, it starts with Viago waking everyone up. He's calling a flat meeting. He's trying to wake up Peter. I think he just gives him a chicken or something, and then Peter has that.
Yeah, gives him a live chicken. Lovely.
I mean, it's really well played.
Because obviously they're all dressed in these like ridiculous outfits that you would expect. Like, this is the thing, they didn't try to like make them modern and make them like fit into modern life. They're kind of like ripped out of their time period and left, and they've kind of stuck like that. As they don't age, but they also don't adapt with everybody. Yeah. And it's not like they're trying to fit in either. So I quite like that.
Yeah,
that's an interesting take on it.
So they have the flat meeting at the start, and then they're like, "Where's Peter?" He's like, "Peter's 8,000 years old. He's not coming to the flat meeting." And it all starts off. I mean, they just basically just saying Deacon is like the young one. He's a rebel, and he's not doing the washing up. He hasn't washed the dishes for 5 years.
Yeah,
I mean, they even say like you need to wash the bloody dishes, and then you look at the dishes and they are actually genuinely bloody, like covered in blood.
yeah. That's good. That's good stuff. That's good stuff, mate. Isn't it? That's classic. Classic.
Yeah. I think we get the little how they spend their evenings to go down to get on the bus, and go to the nightclubs and stuff.
Yeah, and they're like, this is the hottest place in Wellington for vampires. There's like six people there.
Yeah.
We're introduced to like a familiar as well. So there's a woman called Jackie who's like Deacon's human familiar. She's just like a general like mum character, making lists of stuff when Deacon's asking her like various things. Obviously she's keen to get turned into a vampire, as all familiars are, but Deacon can't even like remember that he's like, did I tell you I was good doing that? And did he say be gone?
They've all got the kind of like hypnotize people and do little bits and pieces. I don't know. I think we just get, what hypnotism do we get? I think we just get that.
There's a few bits of hypnotism later as well, aren't there? That is obviously explained. And then we see like Vladislav, like there's a bit where obviously they're walking. Is this when they're walking around trying to get into nightclubs?
Yeah.
And obviously they need to be invited in. So they're going right up to bouncers saying, can you just invite us into the thing? And they're just like, fuck off. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we see Vladislav like trying, like lurking outside someone's house at one point, trying to get invited in and trying to use his hypnotism techniques, but obviously he's not so good at it.
Yeah, ever since the Beast incident, we get the impression that he's had like a crisis of confidence.
Yeah, which is
not quite.
Whoever knows how many hundreds of years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bit where Jackie the familiar lures some virgins back to the flat. For vampires to feed on them. This is pretty good. So there's a woman that like she knew in school who like maybe insulted her or something. So she doesn't want to lure people that she's in any way connected to or attached to, because she knows obviously they're going to die. So it's this young woman and then this guy called Nick back to the flat. But then it's revealed like fairly early on that they're not virgins. She just like assumes one was a virgin.
You were a virgin back then, like what?
Yes, yeah. He's like, yeah, in school. She's like, yes, in school.
Yeah.
And they have a lovely dinner of spaghetti straight out of the tin.
Oh yeah.
Which Deacon says, "Do you like some? Would you like some biscotti?" And he says,
"What biscotti?
Biscotti? I think he offered me some biscotti." And he goes, "Why are you eating worms?" And then obviously he thinks that the spaghetti is worms, and that's another way that they
are really good. Because they're so like under, like he's not screaming or anything. He's just like, "Whoa, they're worms."
He's just like fucking worms. And when he's walking around the house, like trying to get away from them, like you see him. Fuck off! Get out, Carl. How do I get out of here? It's like you see really horrific stuff of like his friend getting like her jugular torn out and blood splaying everywhere. He's like, fucking hell, we're all going to get me out of it.
There's something I really do. with the back, like he grabs his backpack or something, and Deacon's arm.
That's good.
Yeah,
I like that. I really like Nick as well. There's something about Nick, like just his attitude and the way he goes through life. I just think, yeah, I like it, mate. I'd be the same. So then we get like a jump, don't we, in time?
It's like he gets out the door, tries to run away. And
I've got you.
Yeah, yeah.
So Peter gets him, and for some reason, he didn't kill him. He decided to
allow him
to feed on him.
Duncan as well, right?
Deacon?
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. Did he turn them all?
Oh, maybe then. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, so for some reason, he decides to turn Nick into a vampire, and then we get like a time jump for 2 months, and Nick is officially like part of the group now, and he also brings his human friend Stu along to a lot of the gatherings. He's just like a normal dude, computer analyst, and he kind of like really nonchalantly, Nick just basically explains to him that he's a vampire. He's like, "Do you realize I haven't been seeing you during the day anymore, and that I've moved a lot of our tennis games to tennis games?"
Didn't he kind of freeze him or something and say, like, we're not going to eat him, even though I really want to eat him. I'm not going to eat him. And then he just freezes him. Yeah, we can IT you, right? Yeah, yeah, computers.
Yeah. But he shows them loads of stuff. He shows them, like, the internet and cameras and takes selfies and that stuff. So, yeah, Stu's great. Stu's great for the overall morale of the group.
There's, a bubbling rivalry between Deacon, who was classically the young one, versus Nick, who's obviously like 190 years younger.
Yeah. So obviously Deacon is like, despite the fact that he's like a bit of a rebel, he still obviously abides by most of the vampire rules. And as soon as Nick comes into it, he's already, you know, telling everyone that he's a vampire, trying to eat human food, all of this stuff, which obviously we'll go into in a second. But obviously, Deacon basically fucking hates him.
He tells the guy, he's telling everyone in the club, "I'm a vampire, Twilight. That's me."
And then a guy goes, "You're a vampire? I'm a vampire hunter." He goes, "Oh, yeah, you stupid.
Skype me."
Skype me later.
He's also wearing about a time. My Chemical Romance jacket is his sort of.
Yeah, he's wearing like vampire. He's really adapted to. He's struggling to adapt to his life, but he is trying. He's definitely got the get up now. And after he tries to eat some chips, he proper throws up, doesn't he, Nick?
Yeah, he gets a scrap. Him and Deacon have a scrap. He rips his jacket, and then he sort of eats one of Stu's chips and sort of riotously vomits up.
Well, we see a bat fight first, don't we?
Yeah,
we see. Deacon and Nick fighting in bat form, which is pretty funny. I like that. I feel like I'd like to watch that go down.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever seen a bat, when you see a bat fly over your head, you can't really see.
Oh, yeah.
It's too fast. I feel like I wouldn't be able to
catch it. Too fast, yeah. No, you wouldn't be able to see what's happening, would you? Just be like, oh, well. Good times.
So, I mean, Nick's really struggling. They all seem to love Stu, but the vampire hunter, at some point, one morning, they hear Peter screaming in the basement. So they go downstairs. They find that Peter's a vampire hunter's broke in, knocked down the boards, which kind of covered the sunlight. But he's on fire, and they find the vampire hunter that Nick had met with his head twisted on
him. I don't think at any point anybody thought.
Maybe one of the best scenes with the police come around.
Oh, yeah, this scene is phenomenal. So it's got that actress who's also in Thor Ragnarok and Hunt for the Wilder People, the New Zealand actress. She's just, Jeff Goldblum's like right hand woman.
Okay. Did I read right that these two weren't actors? They were actually police or something. Maybe that's not.
Oh, no, wait. I've just realized that I've just got that completely wrong. It's not that person. It's the police officers are just, apparently they're actually police officers in real life. I was thinking of someone else for some reason. My bad.
In real life, they pull off such an amazing performance. So the whole gist is, as they're being hypnotized, so they don't see things as they are. So when they get upstairs, and they're looking at like the dead body or something. What's all this? What's going on here? So he's drunk last night.
When they get hypnotized, whoever does it says, I think it's Viago does it. He says he's not very good at it, but he says you won't see anything strange or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. And they just go down there, and there's a few times where you get like obviously the false.
Hang on a minute, what's this?
Hang here? On a minute, what's this here? And you go like, oh, that's it, the game's up. But it's just like no fire alarms.
Oh yeah, and like there's two vampires on the ceiling. Yeah.
What's this here then? What? No fire alarms. Here. Oh,
got flammable solvent here.
Yeah.
Right next to some lit candle or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And they go, oh yeah, that's pretty bad actually. Yeah.
And they go,
but they pretty much get away with it. And
Let's explain. Let's see whatever safety tips they have around the house.
Yeah. Don't want to kill the police.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good. What else happens around about here?
They kick Nick out.
They kick Nick out because they're like, they blame him essentially for what happened. He gets banished. But Stu has the right to come back when he pleases.
Yeah.
Stu, you can come back when you want.
Stu, you're all right.
So initially, when they were out roaming the clubs, is when they bumped into the werewolves as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. On the way back from the clubs, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, that's pretty. I like this because you do kind of feel like they are werewolves without literally sometimes their eyes kind of glow, don't they? Or one of them gets a bit angry and they sort of.
Yeah.
That's good. But, I like the little group dynamic they got going on with Rhys Darby as the alpha male.
I'm the
like it when the they swear.
Yeah, they all listen to me. So there's like nice little bits in the credits with Rhys Darby saying, "What are you laughing at?"
Oh yeah.
Sometimes I like to test them. What are you laughing at? Well, I don't know, mate. I got you.
yeah, got you again. And he says, "What are you laughing at?" And he says, "Like nothing. What are you at you?" Oh, he passed the test.
Yeah,
passed the test that time.
Yeah, Rhys Darby's great as well. Rhys Darby should be bigger. Although I'm fairly sure he's doing all right.
He's in Jumanji. I was watching this. And my girlfriend said, and she was like, "No." I was like, "That's a shame." That's a shame that he's known as that guy from Jumanji, rather than Murray.
Murray, yeah.
Murray, he maybe did.
Maybe did what?
He maybe did what? No, he maybe did.
Sorry.
Did he maybe do?
Couldn't come to your birthday party, Dave. I wasn't invited. Oh, that's all right, mate.
Yeah. They all sort of go and turn up at the ball, don't they? They've obviously taken Stu because even though he's a human, he's part of the crew now. So they've got to take him there. But then while there, Jackie does appear and speaks to Deacon, and she's been turned into a vampire by Nick. Was it Nick who did it?
Yeah, I think it was Nick. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get the reveal of like who the beast is. And it turns out it's just Vladislav's ex-girlfriend, Pauline. She's got a new boyfriend. Who's this? Who's the dude? Who's the new boyfriend? He looks like a Bo Selector character.
Yeah, he's Australian, isn't he? I think. Is he Australian?
Oh, right, okay. Maybe. Sounds about right.
Also, so his nickname for her has been the Beast all this time, and her to him has been Asshole. So there's been this constant back and forth. It's just like a bickering relationship.
Yeah, but Vladislav does turn up, even though he refused to attend. What was going on with him? He was like, he was all old and wrinkly and
dusty. He was kind of depressed, wasn't he? Yeah. So he hadn't eaten in ages.
Yeah.
And as they were leaving, they were like, come on, go get yourself ready. He should come. He said, "No, leave me to my evil bidding." He said, "What are you bidding on?" He said, "A table." He's on eBay or something.
Yeah, good. Yes, but when he does turn up, he's in like, he's all dressed up to the nines and looking like, obviously, like a big show off.
Yeah.
And when he turns up to basically have a go at a beast.
Well, they find out that Stu's a human because everyone's like, I'm a zombie. What? Can I ask what you are? And he went, I work in IT.
Yeah.
And he starts trying to explain his job, and it's like a really sort of convoluted. We take systems and analyze them. I'm a bit of a business analyst, but not really. And like, everyone's getting dead angry at him.
Yeah. And all this time, the zombie's like slowly leaning into him, almost like the penny's about to drop. But yeah, word quickly gets around that Stu is human. But when Vladislav arrives, sort of at the right moment, doesn't he? Just before everyone's about to kick off and kill Stu.
Yeah. But he has a fight with Pauline's new bloke, but it's Stu impales the new boyfriend on like a flag or something.
Yeah. So it's kicking off. Julian is the new boyfriend fighting with Vladislav. Yeah, and Stu just like impales him, and they all leg it, don't they? They all leave around about this time.
They're all like chanting Stu's name, and that's when
things kind of kick. Yeah, and then they all leave and pretty much encounter the same pack of werewolves from earlier, but they're all sort of ready to transform under the full moon. But they've like tied themselves up, haven't they? Or are they about to tie themselves up?
They're about to, and they don't get around to it. They all start to turn, and then they chase them around.
Yeah.
Stu gets annihilated.
This is like pretty scary. Like, he gets like, a cameraman gets like disemboweled. Stu gets like mauled. This is all pretty scary. Like, this looks like dog soldiers, like werewolves, like blokes on stilts, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think they leave it with Stu. They just have to leave Stu to be eaten by the wolves. Oh yeah, but then the police arrive, and they think he's been attacked by a pack of wild dogs. We found the culprit here. It's like a little border collie. Look at it. It looks okay now. This is going to have to go to be put down, obviously. So, and then Stu sort of turns into a werewolf. I think we cut to a few days later. There's a nice bit with Deacon in the... what's his face? The new guy, I can't remember his name here. Nick. They have like a moment of reconciliation where Deacon's trying to make him feel better about the loss of his mate.
His banishment is rescinded.
Yeah.
And then Viago also manages to reconnect with Catherine, the girlfriend from 1910. He was obviously like ancient, but he turns into a vampire as well. And she's there, and it's like a big happy family scenario. And then it's pretty much revealed not long after that Stu survived the attack. He's now a werewolf, and they sort of invite the werewolves in, don't they? Into the flat. They're all friends now.
Yeah. It's and that's it. I mean, that's it. It's a nice little way to end the film. Everyone's happy.
Yeah, and we get a couple of cool little bits in the credits as well, where we see that we see obviously Viago and Catherine, but we also see Vladislav's got back together with Pauline, aka the Beast, and then Jackie has made her husband into a familiar.
Yeah. So I've got some trivia for you.
Cool.
Is
that the first question?
Yeah.
What moped was that? What brand of moped was that? What year? What CC? Couldn't tell you.
Probably 250 CC, I guess, at the most. Yep. I don't know. Okay, so number one, what was the actor who played Stu hired to do?
What was he hired to do?
Yeah.
IT? I don't know. Was he like...
No, yeah, you got it right.
Stunt double?
So Steve Rutherford had not played a primary acting role in the movie prior to appearing in this one. He was an extra in Boy, but he's actually a part-time business analyst for a Wellington company called Landwalks. He was hired for the film under the impression that he would be working on the computers and that he may have a small part in the film. And then they just kind of made him more and more.
made him one of the biggest parts of the film.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fantastic, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm fairly sure I read they did something like that with the police as well. But thinking about how good their performance is, they have to be actors, surely. I don't know.
Yeah, you'd think so, but you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. Stranger things have happened.
Number two, the building used for the exterior of their house used to be which New Zealand director's office?
Peter Jackson?
Correct. How many New Zealand directors do you know?
Peter Jackson, Taika Waititi, Jermaine Clement, and that's it.
There you go. So, number three. How long did it take to get this film made from writing it to finishing it?
Let's say, from writing it to finishing the... I reckon it's a long time. Let's say 15 years.
It was 9 years they took to get it done. I remember this was an interview with Taika, and he was talking about it, and how it took them about 4 years. It took them a long time to write the script because they're just really slow writers or something. Okay, so I don't know if you noticed this, but on the side of the Cathedral of Despair, there is a sign that kind of shows you what it actually is when it's not the Cathedral of Despair. Did you happen to see what it actually was?
Was it like... No, I didn't. Was it like something ridiculous, like a school?
It was a bowling club. Victoria Ooh. Bowling Club.
Oh.
Okay, here's a nifty little bit of trivia. Okay, so the hill where the vampires have the first run-in with the werewolves was also used in a scene in which Lord of the Rings movie?
The hill?
Yeah.
You
just watched them recently,
is it? Yeah, I did, but I don't recognise that. I'm going to say the first movie.
It is The Fellowship. Can you say which scene? Yeah.
Is it one of the scenes early on with when they think Viggo is the ranger and they go to the pub and the bed and breakfast or whatever it is and they end up to meet him? No?
It's where Frodo and Hobbits are running from the Black Rider and they're hiding under the roots of the tree.
That's kind of close. It's within the same 30-minute window. So, I've got the film, I've got the window right. I'll take that as a victory.
Yeah, I mean, out of the extended edition, that's a good...
Yeah.
So. Nailed it. Man. Need to rate the film. Oh, I haven't really thought about this. I know what I'm going to go with, though.
Yeah, I think this is probably the second time I've seen this. So, like, I saw it once around about the release and I loved it. And loved it enough to be really keen on the idea of there being a TV series, thinking it could translate really well. But going back to the film and watching it for a second time, like, I just realized how much of it stuck with me in terms of quotable bits and memorable, cool little bits and jokes that are just too good not to like enjoy over and over again. Obviously, in terms of a horror movie, I don't think we've done many horror comedies on this podcast, have we? I know we've done Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
I suppose there aren't that many horror comedies anyway. It's one of those genres, isn't it? But yeah, I think it works well. Obviously, mainly as a comedy, but it's good. It kind of sends up the horror genre a little bit, but it's also a bit of a love letter to the horror genre, I think. Whereas it kind of respects the nature of the vampire mythology as well as taking the piss.
Yeah.
So I'd probably give it an A-, I think.
I was going to go a note higher. I was going to go with an A, just a solid A. I mean, I can't really think of what. Maybe I'd like a few more gag jokes in there, but I don't think so. I think it's played really, really perfectly. I can't think of anything that I really want to change in the film. It's kind of a perfect little...
No.
It nails what it's doing. Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to check out the second series, I think, in the next week or so.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Berry is a sort of... you know what you're going to get in Matt Berry. But Kyver Novak, I think, is fantastic. Just about everything he's done as well.
Superb. I think everyone, even like minor characters in it, are good as well.
The
Charles Robinson. Vampire. Charles Robinson? Energy Vampire. Yeah, we've all known somebody like that. So it's very cool. Good times. Good times. Keep saying that tonight.
Cool. Okay, man. Let's finish up. What's next week? We're doing a double bill. Pet Sematary 1 and 2.
So we did say this the last episode, but things, you know, just sometimes things just don't work out the way you expect them to. So next week we're going to do the Pet Sematary, original Pet Sematary, and the sequel with a special guest.
Yeah. Jay Slosnan. Yeah.
Cool. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about his book as well, about horror movie sequels.
Have you read it yet?
I haven't got it yet, but I am going to read it.
Cool. It's really good. I really liked it.
Yeah. As I said, I've been swatting up on my horror movie sequels by watching quite a lot recently. So they'll be ready and willing.
Cool.
Nice one, dude.
Right. Thanks
for another episode in the bag.
If you enjoyed it, become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider rating and reviewing. And remember to join the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. And thanks to my co-host, Ben, for the writer of these.
Thank you very much, Luke. Much obliged.
Nice.
Until next time. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.